Slaughter describes herself as a longtime resident of Atlanta, splitting her time between the kitchen and the living room. But if you keep tabs on the New York Times bestseller list, you'll see there's lots more to Karen. Her first novel, Blindsided, made the Crime Writers Association's Dagger Award shortlist for Best Thriller Debut of 2001. To date, Karen's books have sold more than 30 million copies. Karen has two incredibly popular series, Grant County and Will Trent. Today, though, we'll speak with her about her new standalone bestseller, Pretty Girls. Welcome, Karen. It's great to have you with us on the Book Report.
My pleasure.
First of all, congratulations. What's it like to open the New York Times and read Pretty Girls is a genuinely exciting narrative driven by strong-willed female characters who can't wait around until the boys shake the lead out of their shoes?
Well, you know, it's just amazing. It's something that you always want as an author, but to have your work confirmed as something that valid is a wonderful thing.
Listeners who haven't read your book yet know that you are from the South. So what's it like to set this novel right in Georgia?
You know, all my novels are set in Georgia, and I feel really close to the state. I was born and raised here. I love writing about the experience of being Southern in the modern era, and I feel in some ways like I'm an ambassador for Atlanta because there's a lot of misconceptions about the South, and so, you know, the fact that we're all wearing shoes and not talking about how we lost the war is something I like to show in my novels.
And do you give homage to some of the previous, you know, fabulous Southern writers who come before you?
I hope so. You know, I grew up reading Flannery O'Connor, and I just loved her work. The first time I read it, I was a kid, and I had no idea that she was actually accomplishing more than telling a good story. She was using shock and violence to pry off the scab from the human condition. And as an older person and in college, I began to understand that words and stories can be used for much more than just entertainment. There can be different layers to them.
That's so true. All right, let's get to Pretty Girls. Can you introduce us to Claire Scott?
Well, Claire opens the book, and when we meet her, you know, she seems to have a perfect life. She's wealthy. She's got a handsome husband who takes care of her, and, you know, everything seems very normal in her life. But, of course, this being a thriller, something awful happens in that first chapter, and it turns Claire's life upside down. And we find out that this isn't the first time that she's been negatively affected by crime 24 years prior to when we first meet her in the book. Her oldest sister, Julia, disappeared. She was a college student, young and pretty, and she was out walking on campus, and she just disappeared, and the family never found out what happened to her. And when I say family, I mean her mother and her father and her middle sister, Lydia, who also is in the book. And when we meet Lydia, she's estranged from Claire for reasons that become quickly clear.
Can you tell us a little more about Lydia? I think everybody loves Lydia.
Well, I love Lydia. You know, she is very close to me in my sense of humor. She's over 40, and she's realized that a lot of things she kept telling herself when she was younger, I'll get to that before I'm 40. Well, it's too late. You know, she embodies that sort of attitude of I'm just going to do the best I can and give myself a break, which I think is probably the only thing that's a positive about turning 40 is you kind of give yourself a break. But she has a daughter. She's had some struggles in her life. She went off the rails after her sister disappeared. She used drugs and alcohol to deaden that loss, and it took her a long time to get righted. But now her life is pretty good. She's got a great guy, and her daughter's about to go to college. But of course, you know, this being a thriller, as I said, something bad happens that shakes up her world.
You know, you get sibling relationships dead on, so to speak. Do you yourself have a sister?
I have two older sisters, and, you know, we fought like cats and dogs when we were little. I probably would have been happy if one of them disappeared, but as an adult, I understand, and, you know, I have a good relationship with them now, and I love writing about sister relationships because they're so fraught. You know, there's always some kind of history, and your sister knows you better than anybody else in the world, which could be a good and a bad thing.
You know, as you said, the book centers on what happens to families when a child goes missing. In your research for Pretty Girls, did you actually interview families who have had to live with this tragedy?
You know, I'm not not a reporter. I'm a writer. I write mostly for entertainment, and I don't want to feel like I'm exploiting someone's horrible experience. But what I did was two things. One, I just imagined, okay, well, if I was in this situation, what would it feel like, which is an author's job. But I also looked at the Internet, because there are people who have posted things online who have had this tragedy happen to their family. You know, a family member disappears. They never hear from them again. They never know what happens. And I figure that if they're posting it on the Internet, that's for general consumption. So I don't feel bad about looking at that.
You know, in preparing for this interview, I saw you are widely credited with coining the term investigoogling. What is that exactly?
Well, it's a deep Google search, you know, where you don't just look up, you know, what does this mole look like? You go deeper into it and read medical reports and read all of the information that's out there. So it's not just a quick check of Wikipedia.
We're speaking to Karen Slaughter on The Book Report. The cops in the book seem kind of a squirmy lot through most of the story. Do you ever get pushback from readers who are policemen and women?
For the most part, I write about cops as the good guys. And, you know, the thing is, I played with that a little bit in Pretty Girls because I didn't want you to feel completely certain you could trust the police. And as a narrative technique, I think that works very well. But when I'm writing about Will Trent, my series character, and I'm currently working on a book for next year that has Will Trent, I am very conscious that I have some makeup to do for Pretty Girls. And so I'm showing him as a hero, as a good guy. And honestly, he's like most cops. You know, we only hear about the handful of bad ones. He's doing his job. He really cares about people. He's risking his life. And, you know, I think sometimes it's easier to write about bad cops because we have that stereotype. But writing about a good cop is what I like to do.
There are so many plot twists in the book. Do you map them out before you start writing, or do you surprise yourself as you write?
Keep them in my head. You know, I'm not one of these surprise myself sorts of writers, because I think very carefully about what I'm going to write before I write it. So by the time I sit down, it's pretty much done. It's all been in my head. It's all been worked out, the different beats of it. So I'm not surprised per se, but I do love it when I have that spark of inspiration about the twists and turns. And this novel has a lot of them, and I love that.
You know, you mentioned Will Trent. What made you veer away from Will Trent and write this standalone book, Pretty Girls?
As much as I love writing about Will Trent and writing a series, I thought, you know, I don't want to get bored with this. I want to take a little break. And so I wrote Pretty Girls, and prior to this, I wrote another novel called Cop Town about female officers in the 1970s. And I really appreciated that departure, because now going back into Will Trent, I feel a renewed vigor for writing his story and passionate about talking about what he's doing in his life.
You have Lydia say early on, "The world stops for you when you're pretty. That's why women spend billions on stuff for their faces. Their whole life, they're the center of attention. People want to be around them because they're attractive. Their jokes are funnier. Their lives are better. And then suddenly they get bags under their eyes, or they put on a little weight, and no one cares about them anymore. They cease to exist." You've certainly captured the angst of aging baby boomers. Where did you get this kind of insight?
Well, a bit of it is my own insight, just from my own life. You know, when you're young, you can be stupid and silly, and people pay attention to you more, and they forgive you more if you can manage to be attractive in the process. But it is true that, I mean, gosh, you're in radio, I'm in books, and my picture's on my books. And, you know, there's a tendency in the media to celebrate youth. And I think one positive influence of the baby boomers, because we could go on about some of the negative influences, but that it's okay now for women to age. You know, not too much, of course, but Meryl Streep certainly has paved the way, and baby boomers have said, hey, you know, I don't want to be irrelevant in my 50s or 60s or 70s. And it's really changed things, and I think that's had a knock-on effect to young women. You know, if you look at Lena Dunham and Jennifer Lawrence, and these women are suddenly talking about things such as equality, pay equality, and feminism, and there aren't those negative connotations that there were for my generation.
By the way, you look very fabulous on your book cover.
<Thank you. laughs>
Kathleen Early narrates this book, and she's done quite a few of your titles. Are you involved at all with the audio editions of your books?
Well, I am, and I was very careful about picking Kathleen. I really love what she does. In some of my earlier audiobooks, it sounded like they just found a trailer park and shaken out the crappiest accent they could find or the trashiest accent they could find. And I really felt upset about that because, you know, so they had all the Southerners sounding like they were playing banjos and picking their teeth with straw. And I would call them on the phone and say, listen to me, this is how people in Atlanta sound. This is an Atlanta accent. And they would say, okay, but then they would go back to some twangy kind of thing that I, you know, hasn't been around since Andy Griffith. So I'm really pleased with Kathleen. She's from Savannah. We had a long conversation about what the characters would sound like, and I think she does a fantastic job.
Karen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Bye now.